Giacomo Rafael Byros is joining the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra as the guest conductor of their concerts on March 17th and 18th. We sat down to talk about the performances, and the conversation led us to some very interesting places. Giacomo, welcome to Knoxville. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So you have a very entertaining and diverse program planned for this week's concerts. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear?
Well, this program is very exciting. We're taking a really interesting, colorful journey. We open up the program with John Adams' Chairman Dances, a foxtrot for orchestra, which is a very rhythmic, driving, intense, also beautiful and jazzy piece of music that incorporates a lot of styles and interesting genres. As we know, John Adams is one of the most famous living American composers we have, and he draws inspiration from many different areas of the American vernacular. But one I really connect to that is very prominent throughout the entire piece is this rhythmic drive. I've always sort of connected with America's rhythm, America's like rhythmic heartbeat, and this piece sort of takes that to another level throughout. And it just has all these wonderful moments of color and pizzazz and excitement that really is just very interesting and also very American. And so as an American conductor, I wanted to try to support a living composer as well as present art that I think is very appropriate for society now. You know, I always want to present music that really speaks to people in society now. So that piece sort of fit that bill for this part of the program. And then my good friend and dear colleague, Elena Urieste, she's such a magnificent soloist. She has the most beautiful, gorgeous tone, such a singing quality to her playing. We thought, you know, when this whole concert came up, we thought I wanted to do something with her that I knew that she would want to play as well. I mean, we all have music that we love, and sometimes we have a piece that we're a little more connected with. And that was something that she really loved and I really loved, and we thought it'd be perfect for this program. For several reasons. One, it continues the tradition of a little bit of an American first half. But at the same time, Barber was very closely associated with the Curtis Institute of Music. He went to school there. That's where he learned his compositional chops, and you know, his career sort of took off as he was a student at Curtis. Elena is a Curtis graduate, and it is known that the Curtis School of Music produces violinists, string players that have a certain sound. There's a certain sound quality that the string playing has at Curtis. And you hear it in the Philadelphia Orchestra. It's just a tradition of string playing that's been going on there for quite some time. So there's this connection between her and the composer because of both Curtis, but also at the same time, there's a certain sort of style and sound that she brings to the piece that's very authentic. And so, you know, when the whole piece, the whole program started coming together, I thought it would be really great to sort of have a moment that we have this American composer that's very current and hip and new with all these driving rhythmic patterns, and then another American composer who was defining the American sound, but it's very lyrical, expressive, and deep. And one thing about Barber that's amazing is that it's so emotionally impactful. If you think of Adagio for strings, the very first B flat, when it starts, it just grabs you. It just pulls you in. And the silence and the quietness and the powerfulness of this B flat in the violins just automatically grabs you, and you know something emotional is going to happen. There's an immediacy of his emotional impact in his music, and that's something I really love. It just, as soon as the first note starts, one, you know it's Barber, and two, you're drawn in emotionally in a way that a lot of other music doesn't do right away. And especially the second movement, my goodness, the second movement's the most beautiful thing ever put to paper. So we're just really excited to share that work with everyone here. And then Pictures at an Exhibition is just this amazing virtuosic tour de force. You know, when I found out I was going to come to Knoxville, I mean, I can't tell you enough how many people were saying, oh man, the Knoxville Symphony, they are really up and coming. They sound great. They've been doing a lot of great work. It's a really fantastic orchestra. It's a total gem. And I was like, great. I'm really enthusiastic to meet them. And let me see if I can find a piece that's going to show off that virtuosity that I keep hearing about, because the reputation for the symphony is wonderful. And so Pictures at an Exhibition pretty much gives something for everybody. You know, every major instrument has a big solo, major sections get big sort of virtuosic solos or solis. And on top of all that, it's just a work full of imagery, subtext, color. It has all this like dynamicism. It has all this interesting flavors. It's very Russian and folk inspired in terms of its content, but at the same time, it has this infusement of the French aesthetic and color and sheen, all these really great like imagery and context that I think makes the piece really exciting. And it's one of those pieces that by the end of it, if you're not like jumping out of your seat thrilled with how it ends, then, you know, I don't know if you really truly love classical music because it has this like such a powerful ending with the brass and the church bells and the gongs. It's just a really fun, rabble-rousing piece that I knew would be a home run for the audiences here. But at the same time, there's these moments of reflection and introspection that are just absolutely fabulous. For example, in the last movement, The Great Gate of Kiev, there's this clarinet and bassoon chorale. Now, on the piano, which what it was originally written for, it's very basic, and you know, you hit the chords on the piano, you can use a soft pedal, and you can make it legato, you can make it a certain sound. But what Ravel did was take the combination of bassoons and clarinets in a certain range and add this sort of lyricism to it that made this chorale so beautiful. I mean, it's a very simple baptismal sort of chant-like chorale that was originally a prayer, and he puts non-expressive over the notes. So all you have to do is really just play the notes, but it's so hard because it's just the way the range is. But when you do it and you just do it simplice, very simply, and just perform it, it has this powerful impact. And then right after that's over, the orchestra comes back in tutti with these big notes and big brass sections. And so there's this dichotomy of introspection and then also this outward emotion that's very exciting. And, you know, there's a story behind each vignette, you know, like Gnomus is one of my favorite. And, you know, and Gnomus is this creature with these like fangled teeth, and he's got one leg shorter than the other, and he's like hopping around, walking around, and he's very ugly and just sort of like aggressive. And the music really matches that. And the music is, it turns on a dime so fast. You'll have two or three measures fast, like wild notes, and then all of a sudden something really soft and slow, and it shows this mystery behind this creature. And then of course the promenades, the way they unfold throughout the piece, and you know, like the old castle, it's like a troubadour song, and you know, there's just all these great ideas that Mussorgsky had that he created through this piano part that Ravel really fleshed out and really took to another level. And every note in that piece means something. And it's something I've explained to the orchestra, which they get totally because they feel it intrinsically. But, you know, the audience should know that every last articulation, every last note, every last line is actually carefully, meticulously put together by Ravel in a way that is so incredible in terms of economy of means. Like nothing means nothing, you know, like every last little detail is there for a very specific reason. And so the piece is just a masterpiece, both from the compositional side of Mussorgsky, as well as what Ravel did to rearrange it for the big orchestra. So it's very exciting, very happy to be presenting this program. The orchestra is just chewing it up. They love playing, I think, all this music, and it's really going to be a fun weekend.
You're one of the candidates for the KSO Music Director position. Can you tell us what attracted you to the symphony and why you'd like to join us here in Knoxville?
Well, first of all, as a conductor, I feel that the most impact I can have as a musician, as an artist, as a creative person, is to be a leader of an organization within a community. It takes time, but it's my experience in the orchestras I have now currently that if you really want to make major transformation within a community, as a music director, you hold a very special place to do that. The orchestra is an incredible vehicle for expression. And you can deliver art on many levels: chamber music, big concerts, going out to schools, going out to, you know, institutions where maybe they don't receive live performance. That's one level, that's one layer. But then also the orchestra is a connector, it's a communicator, it's a gravitational pull for the community to get very excited about who they are and who they want to be and who they want to be defined by. The orchestra has this amazing space to collaborate with artists, collaborate with different institutions within a community to provide uplifting experiences on many levels, not just orally, not just the concert hall. You know, a lot of people talk about, oh, well, what does an orchestra do? It just plays concerts on Friday, Saturday, Thursday night, whatever. It's like, well, that's the tip of the iceberg. You know, education, outreach, meeting different organizations, putting together concerts that use visuals or having different types of people come to work with your orchestra that maybe you don't normally see with an orchestra. To me, those are really exciting, and they create what is a 21st century orchestra supposed to be. The orchestra now is different than it was in Beethoven's time and Mozart's time. And it's funny, both Mozart and Beethoven were famous for saying, I write music for the people, not for the aristocrats. They both said it. And to me, that says that this music, or the music that we do and that we love, needs to be shared to as many people as possible. How do we do that? We have to create hooks. We have to create excitement. We have to create compelling programming. And all of this sort of comes together and creates this environment in which the community can be proud, can be excited, can be transformed, can be touched. And our soul as a human needs to be fed. You know, we need culture, we need art, we need that side of things to sort of balance our own personal lives. We're all so busy, and we're also like connected to online and social media. And while that has its great uses and its very powerful tools to get messages out, it's very hard to feel connected to people. And the orchestra does that. The orchestra brings you in. You know, one of the most exciting things for me isn't the end of a big loud piece where the gongs are going and the brass are going. Some of the most exciting moments are the softest, most quietest moments of a piece, because it brings the listener on stage. It pulls the audience in, and it creates this connection between the composer, the musician, the audience, where we're all feeling something together. We're all being stirred. And so I don't know if everyone realizes how powerful an orchestra can be, or how incredibly connective an orchestra can be for its community. And I think as a music director, that really excites me, because it takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, it takes time to really sort of put out your artistic profile of the kind of music you love to do and love to conduct. And then it takes time for the audiences and patrons to sort of, okay, let me wrap my head around that. Okay. And then it takes a while to find what's the most compelling product you can deliver. And once you find that sweet spot, then there becomes this like complete sort of universal circle of life within the orchestra community that benefits everybody. And so, you know, when Knoxville was looking for their new music director, and I saw that it was open, I certainly applied in thinking that there can be some major transformation here. You know, they've been on a certain path for a while and they've done extremely well, but you know, now they're looking to start a new path. And I feel like as an artist myself in the 21st century, my goal is to create these environments in which an orchestra not only can thrive, but the community will thrive with it and make these connections that are really exciting. And so to me, that's what's really exciting. Of course, I love guest conducting. I love meeting new orchestras. I love working with, you know, unique artists. But there's something really, really rewarding about being a music director that you just don't understand until you become one. And because now I have my own orchestras and I've seen the work that can be done and the potential, it's something that I'm really excited about furthering here in Knoxville.
In addition to conducting the Amarillo Symphony, you and composer Sam Hyken created the Nudeco Ensemble. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Nudeco Ensemble is billed as a 21st century chamber orchestra. We're a genre-bending, collaborating group of classical musicians that does music of all arenas. Sometimes we say we do Bach to pop. Sometimes we do living composers. Sometimes we mix in artists of very unique character. For example, one of our first concerts we did was with an electronic dance music group called Afro Beta. We've also done music with a singer in Miami called Brica. We've worked with Project Trio, which is a very unique, eclectic trio of musicians that does a lot of cross-genre mixing as well. So it's an orchestra. It's a chamber orchestra. It's 24 musicians. It's comprised of some of the best South Florida musicians we have, you know, University of Miami professors, Florida Grand Opera musicians, the ballet, you know, all these musicians are top world-class musicians. And in South Florida, we felt there was a space, especially in Miami now, to create a very eclectic, creative, collaborative ensemble because of what's happening in Miami. Miami's going through a big cultural renaissance, both artistically, design, fashion, of course, has always been there, but there's been a lot of money pumped into the arts. There's been a lot of energy. There's been a lot of enthusiasm pumped into the arts, both on visual as well as musical. And so, you know, Nudeco Ensemble was born out of this idea of, what is the future of classical music going to look like? How can we shape it in a way that brings more people into the genre that we love? And so we look at ourselves as a bridge to connect people who may have never or would never just randomly go to a symphony orchestra concert to get them excited about live music, to get them excited about live classical musicians performing music, and to just ultimately get them excited about supporting art on a level that's presenting things in a way that is speaking to them. Because again, I go back to this idea of speaking to society today. People have very eclectic tastes. You know, you look at someone's Spotify playlist that has everything from Rachmaninoff to Radiohead to whoever, Adele. Everyone has a very specific curated list of music they like to listen to. And with all the technology and all the apps and all the different musicians out there, you know, to me, it's no one just turns. I mean, I don't want to say it. I'm at a radio station right now, but like, I think people less and less are just turning on their regular radio, which I think, you know, it's troubling, I know, for everybody, but they find other places to find their music, and then they gather it and they compile it in a curated list, and that's what they want. So for us at NewDeco, the thing was, okay, there's several things we want to hit. One, we want to support new music and living composers, because there's so many great young composers out there that are doing amazing things and writing in a way that's very unique and special, relevant and current. For example, we were speaking before this interview started about Mason Bates. You know, he's a friend of mine. He's just released a new recording with the San Francisco Symphony. He mixes in electronics with the orchestra as an instrument. It's not even like I'm gonna press a button and then the conductor has a click track and we'll see what happens. It's like, no, he sits back there and plays instruments that produce electronic sounds and it mixes with the orchestra. Now, people are like, well, that's not really traditional, or that's kind of a weird thing to do. Well, you know what? Mozart was made fun of for making pizzicati. You know, why are you going to pluck a string? Like, that is the weirdest thing ever. And now it's like everyone does it. So it's just, you know, time, life changes. There's the one constant in life is change, right? And the music industry is changing and people's tastes are changing and we have to adapt to the times. And NewDeco is a reflection of that. Collaborating with, you know, media artists, digital media artists, visual artists, DJs, bands, you know, it teaches and tells the community in Miami that, hey, classical music is where it's at. It's one of the coolest things out there. And we are such diverse musicians that we can collaborate with any sort of platform. And so that in and of itself is exciting. And then the sort of ace in the hole is Sam Hyken, my partner on this whole adventure. He's the co-founder as well as artistic director, as am I. And he writes incredible music and arranges sort of very unique artists for the orchestra. For example, our very first concert, he made a Daft Punk suite. Now, I don't know if everyone knows about Daft Punk, but they're the French pop duo that took home all the Grammys a couple years ago with Pharrell, and they write amazing music. They've been around a long time now. They've been around like 20, 25 years, and they're very eclectic. All their albums sound different. And if you really listen to their music, it's very orchestral in a lot of ways. Sure, it was created in a studio. Sure, it uses a lot of electronic music and electronic forms, but it's very orchestral. And so the interesting thing to us is it's music on the grid in a way, right? We all live on a grid these days. We have phones, we have computers, there's a pulse to things, there's a beat to things, there's a pulse to life, but music created in computers or music created with software lives in a grid. So the interesting thing is taking it off the grid and putting the organic nature of human performance behind it and letting it create a new dynamic sound. And so we did like a whole suite of their music on our first concert, and people really gravitated to it. And the interesting thing was when we had our debut, April 4th, 2015, we're not even a year away from our debut, and we're already like seven or eight concerts in now, which is crazy, which tells us like the community is really embracing us. But when we did this first concert, we had all kinds of people there. We had young people, we had older people, we had a whole mixed bag of backgrounds, color, race, everything, culture, all of it. And we had people come and tell us that they came to the show because they saw Daft Punk was going to be on the program. And they're like, we wanted to hear what that was going to sound like. But then they walked out telling us, man, that living composer, that one composer we heard, that was amazing. I didn't know young composers out there did stuff like that. And then we had people who like came in to hear the living composers because they were new music heads or whatever. And they walked out going, man, that Daft Punk was the coolest thing we've ever heard. Like, so, and then, you know, then the collaborations with Afrobeta, which was, you know, fantastic. You know, the group is a duo. One is on the synthesizer, the other is the singer. And, you know, people just could not believe that you can mix that with an orchestra. And it was done beautifully well. And again, the ace in the hole is Sam Hyken because he's doing the arrangements and no one is writing them like he is. But it just came across so in a way that we stumbled really upon this formula: collaboration, new music, but new music that's digestible, approachable, stuff that, like, again, speaks to what people are listening to today. You know, before we spoke, the interview started, we spoke about new music, contemporary music, modern music. You know, modern, contemporary, these are words we throw out because they elicit sometimes a negative connotation from, you know, the past of the 20th century composers who sort of pushed modernism in a direction that really alienated people. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that I want to devaluate that or say that that's not valid. It's just, it's not what we do. What we do is we take music by living composers that are speaking to what we feel is society today, and we want to elevate them. Because by elevating them through performance, elevating our collaborators through performance, and elevating our musicians and audiences through performance, then we're creating, again, this environment in which people can be bridged over to the classical music scene. You know, if we get people into our audiences who've never gone to a symphony concert, and then they get to know what it is symphonies do, then we did the trick. The interesting thing is we're kind of evolving really fast. We have a drum set that we have with our orchestra. We have an electric bass that kind of acts as tuba and electric bass. It really fills out the sound. We work with electronics all the time. We have an army of percussion players. And we have the ability to create some amazing sounds with a small group. We're very nimble. We're very flexible. We don't have to raise as much money as others. We can perform in all kinds of unique venues. Our resident home space is called the Miami Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse, which is located in the Wynwood Arts District of Miami, which is like super eclectic, very cool space, graffiti on every building. It's like just a very happening area of Miami. And because of the nature of the smallness of the theater, it almost feels like it's our 25th musician. You're sitting right up next to the musicians. Their bows are like dodging your face back and forth. I mean, it's like you feel the intensity. It's a vibe that you just can't recreate in a bigger hall. So it gives people a space to get really connected to the musicians, to the music. And it's just been a real exciting journey. And it's all about building and creating audiences. It is our responsibility and our mission to build and create new audiences. We have to create these places where people can come and be a part of something compelling. Every orchestra concert has to be an event. It has to be like this amazing event. And if it's not, then people don't want to come. There's too many other things that people can do that give them an experience that's very wonderful. So why come and spend their money at the symphony? Because we have to create these new spaces for them to come in, and we have to make a pathway for new audiences to get excited about what it is we're doing.
Back to this week's concerts. Are there any particularly special moments that you'd like to point out to audiences before they hear it for themselves? Maybe give them a little inspiration to come to the show?
One of my personal favorite moments of the concert is the second movement of the Barber Violin Concerto. In speaking about Barber earlier, the immediacy of the emotional impact is there. It starts with this, like, just unbelievably gorgeous string sound that is very delicate and dolce and suave and just soft. And then it's followed by this, like, very haunting horn entrances that take you through this very interesting harmonic progression very quickly, and then releases you into this beautiful oboe solo that just transports you to this other place. And it's sometimes hard for me to even listen to the music and study it because it's so emotional and it like grabs you in such a powerful way so quick. And then the whole movement is like this, and there's just a very simple theme that gets passed around between the oboe and the horn, and then later with the violin when it comes in. And it's just something that I connect with very personally because of my own personal history, but I think a lot of people can really get pulled in emotionally, and it's going to stir you. It's going to stir you in a way that you're meant to be stirred. You know, we're human. We're full of all these emotions, and this music really brings that side out, and that's very, very, very powerful. Of course, you know, Pictures at an Exhibition is one of my all-time favorites. I remember playing it when I was in high school and college, and you know, one of my most favorite performances I've ever had with it is when I was playing with the Singapore Symphony. Lauren Mazel was conducting us, and he was, you know, unfortunately we lost him a few years ago, but he was, you know, one of the greatest conductors ever. And we got to this moment right before the final big tutti section of the Great Gate of Kiev, where the orchestra does all these notes. It's like a lot of notes, silence, and then it's like an immediate cutoff, and there's a silence, and then Yana, and then the big theme comes in. Da, da, dee, dee, da. The strings are like dee, 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 dee. It's like everything is happening. But that silence that happens right before it is so magical. It's so powerful because you've been playing all these notes. You've been playing all this loud stuff. It's really exciting. The buildup, the buildup, the buildup. Boom. And then it goes. And you're just like, whoa, the silence just like captures you. And I remember in that concert, that moment. So like every time I get the chance to perform this piece or conduct this piece, I'm always looking for that magical moment. I have to go for it, because if you don't go for it, you for sure won't get it. But at the same time, if you get it and you capture that moment and you create that silence, that power in the silence is unbelievable. And it was only created because of all the cacophony around it. So those are two moments for me that I really think are special in this program, among the many of, you know, there's so many, it's just hard to narrow them all down.
Well, I don't think anyone can afford to miss those magical moments, so we'll have to make sure and see the show on Thursday or Friday or both. Giacomo, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you here at WUOT.
Great. No, thank you.
Guest conductor Giacomo Rafael Byros. He is leading the Knoxville Symphony in their upcoming concerts this week. They'll be performing the Chairman Dances, Foxtrot for Orchestra by John Adams, Barber's Violin Concerto with guest violinist Elena Uriaste, and Mussorgsky and Ravel's Pictures at an Exhibition. The performances take place Thursday, March 17th, and Friday, March 18th. Both are held at the Tennessee Theater and begin promptly at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at knoxvillesymphony.com or by phone 865-291-3310.